Blog Talk Radio.
It's Sunday night, 8 o'clock, and Graphic Policy Radio is back on the air after a rather long hiatus. With me is Alana. How you doing?
Hey, great to be back.
Yeah, it's been quite a while, and with a hurricane bearing down on us, why not start? Roll the dice as to whether or not this is
It's a bit of a horror, science fiction, dystopia, zombie thing happening, so, you know.
So, we can just get right back to it. We got a hell of a lot to cover. I figure let's start with New York Comic Con, which took place, what, 2 weeks ago? 3 weeks ago? it took place a Nerd Flu ago. So it was four days in New York City, Javits Center. It's always a great show. I think there was like 115,000 people that showed up for the convention. So your thoughts? I mean, you were there last year. I don't know if you got
this is my third year. I had a fantastic time. It was absolutely packed and hard to get to where you needed to go, unfortunately, and you had to start sort of strategizing three-dimensional chess about making sure that you were in the right side of the building for the panel that you wanted to get into. It might have been a better job of grouping those by interest, actually, within the locational areas. But, you know, I mean, it's great success for them that they did it. I thought the Artist Alley setup was wonderful. Was, you know, much easier to find who you were looking for in Artist Alley this time, and was able to pick up a really great commission for a friend of mine's wedding gift. And
nice.
I did not get a press pass this year, though, so you may have been present at some panels or conversations that I had missed, because I know last year when I was able to do the press stuff, I was able to have some more direct conversations with some of the creators and stuff like that, which is pretty cool.
I got hooked up with the press pass. It was good. Like, I mean, for me, it mostly gave me a little bit more access of getting interviews than anything else. I didn't go to a hell of a lot of panels. I'm just not a panel person in general. I think the one thing I did go to was a Firefly reunion, and that was mostly because the person that was with me really, really, really wanted to go. So I prodded her. We were out in the like ante chamber waiting, and the line just kept that going and going and going. I'm like, hell, let's hop in the line, and worst case scenario, we sit back down and watch it on the big screen. But we actually got into the IGN theater to watch it, so that was actually really cool, and she was really psyched. So that was like the one thing I really sat down with to watch. But interviews was awesome. Like, I got to chat with David Lloyd, which we put up on the site, and that was just a great interview. I got to chat with him about V for Vendetta, his new webcomic or web magazine, just politics in general. That was really, really kind of a great conversation. He was wonderful to talk to, and it was literally like, hey, meet at this time, sit down, and we just shoot the shit. And then Bill Willingham, who's on the other side of the spectrum when it comes to politics, DC, you know, I got hooked up to sit down with him, and it was actually a great conversation. Hopefully get to continue it. He was actually really fun to chat with, the opposite end, and wasn't kind of a jerk about it, and was fun to chat with and spar back and forth. So it was fun for a whole other reason. And then for those who are friends with me on Facebook, you might have seen I have a photo with me, Robert Carradine, and Curtis Armstrong, who were from Revenge of the Nerds, who have a show coming up on TBS in January, I think. So they were there to promote that. So that was actually really kind of cool. And that was more of a, hey, we've got this opportunity. Do you want to interview them? And I'm like, okay. So that was kind of fun just to sit down and chat with them for a little while. And I actually did that waiting for the Firefly panel to start.
Wow. I could say my random panel experience was I ended up in the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles panel, like, just because everything I wanted to go to I couldn't get into. And it turned out to be really interesting because, you know, it's for the new cartoon that's coming out. they have some serious budget going on because they have Andrea Romano directing, right? And she's like the greatest cartoon director of all time, pretty much. And Sean Astin is one of the voice actors. He's playing Raphael. Yep. Super aggro Raphael, actually. A couple of the original voice actors from the show are doing it. And just the quality of the art and the talent on the show was just so high. I'm not a huge Ninja Turtles fan, but I could definitely see this was, you know, going to be a quality product. And it was a lot of fun to check it out. I wouldn't have really encountered it otherwise. I mean, folks know, you know, probably I watch a ton of children's cartoons, but that is not one of the ones that had been on my to-watch list. But now I'll probably be checking it out.
So yeah, did you go through the Turtles tunnel that was set up?
No.
So there was, walk around the floor, there was like the two tunnels that you can get through the two sides of the main floor, not the where the artist alley is. But there was the main floor, and then there was kind of the other section that I guess they had more like toys-ish stuff.
Yeah.
And then there was a tunnel that was, the closest tunnel was actually set up to be TMNT. So it was really dark, a lot of neon, kind of with the style of the cartoon. TVs going all over the place. They had like sewer set up. In the corner was a bunch of like industrial buckets with the ooze in them. I mean, it was one of those things that was like, wow, for, you know, having a crappy situation, having to deal with that, it was actually a really creative way to handle it.
Wow, that is really neat. I wish I'd known. That sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was really, really smart. And just generally, like, it was just a great way of going about it. Like, it's not something you normally see. I remember, like, the last 2 years have just been construction and construction and construction going on. So that's been, you know, always has issues in that, you know, the tunnels have always been an issue, and it just looks like crap. But this year it seems like they did something really intelligent with the Turtles tunnel, as some people are calling it.
Smart. Yeah, well, that's really cool. I wish I'd checked that out. Exciting thing, I ran into Peter David. I just was, like, in Artist Alley, and then there was Peter David. I had a moment of, like, what? Ah, then I said, you are Peter David. And he said, the moment of recognition hits. And I asked him, I said, are you the person who's written the longest run on a series that you yourself did not create in comics? And he was thinking about it, and he's like, actually, some of the real, you know, golden age creators went even longer. But of current time, I might be.
Are we talking X-Factor?
Peter David, yep, X-Factor. His 100th issue of X-Factor is coming out.
It might be up
can
there.
Can you imagine?
So I think the closest that I can think of is Brubaker, if you count all the Captain America stuff he's done.
Mm-hmm.
So like the old volume to the new volume, I think the new volume ended with 19, and or was his final, and that would have been 100 issues. So the David probably would be up there. I can't think of anyone else that's had that sort of run.
Yeah, it's remarkable. And I think it's interesting also to have one creator working on the same very, very soapy title the whole time also. I think that sort of is an interesting way to handle it because of the focus really being on character growth over time, and to have one person doing that for that whole period of time is an interesting
Yeah. I mean, X-Factor for me is like, I really like his writing. The art is killing me. They keep on switching up the artists.
Yes.
And it just doesn't.
Great cover artists.
Yes. The cover tends to be really, really good. It's the interior is so inconsistent. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's really, really solid. And sometimes it's like beyond horrible.
And it's clearly it's rushed. Like when it's bad, it's often because you can tell it's rushed. Like they didn't do the line on that guy's nose. Oh boy. You know? It's a strange problem. I don't know what's going on, but I agree the art has been really weak in spite of having some really good covers.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's always, and for it's a good chunk of his run has been like that, at least with the latest volume of the series. It's just been, it's probably been at least a year, and it's just been an inconsistent year, if not longer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sad because it's really, really good writing.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know me, I feel like most of the art usually sucks, so I'm just like, oh yeah, that's one more comic that doesn't have art that lives up to material. I don't know what you do. Yeah, but it is unfortunate. And I have noticed that with X-Factor, more often than not, the problem seems to not be the skill of the artist, but the amount of time spent on the piece, actually. So, yeah, it's unfortunate. Yeah.
It'd be a good one to go and look at the artist and see what else they do and see if it's rushed or... It's just their skill, but yeah, I mean, it kills me because it's such a great series, especially for what's out there with the X stuff, which has always got pretty, had pretty solid writing recently.
Yeah, I'm reading more X books now than I have ever in my entire life. I like have to cut down because it's just too much, but I want to read all these. I'm hoping Ken can be on the show later. We can vent about this, but I'm reading way too many X-Men titles right now.
Well,
there's a lot of this stuff going on.
Let's see here. They've got we can chat X titles. So Astonishing, I think, finally has kind of gotten its feet with the North Star marriage storyline that moved into the whole comic.
Yeah.
That was a series for a while for me that never quite had its own identity. And now it's just solid, good X stories.
Yeah. She definitely came up with a unique team that we hadn't all seen or heard to death. That are all characters that are people are interested in, or at least in the case of Warbird, is a new one and is interesting potential. And, it's unique from the others. It's not. It's its own feel.
Yeah, and then you got the main X-Men, which is... Are you reading that, just the straight-up X-Men? No?
I have no adjective list, sadly, no.
I was just saying, because they've got this really... It's a team led by Storm. I'm not quite sure where the hell it fits into continuity... which is probably the only issue, but they've got this interesting about like proto mutants that existed a long time ago, and it's more of a.
You say proto or chrono mutants?
Proto. So it's
proto chrono mutants, though. That would make sense.
Yeah, it's interesting in that like this is supposed to be their ancestors. There's like one running around. People are trying to find the genetic material, and the bigger question is when the hell does this all fit into the greater storyline? Because she's still answering to Scott, and we know from AVX, Scott's now in jail, so...
Yeah.
And then Uncanny, I know you were really enjoying Uncanny.
Oh, yes, and I still am. I think Gillen is leaving the book now?
Yes.
Soon or something? But, Uncanny has been lots of fun. Uncanny has... done some creative stories that I have not seen elsewhere. I love his take on Mr. Sinister. This whole commentary on like this guy creating a species of himself. And because, you know, he thinks that he is the perfect being, therefore this is the perfect species. And he built this whole ecosystem out of Mr. Sinister's, not, you know, like a whole class of, you know, worker sinisters and general sinisters, and then he manages various clones. I haven't seen any story like that in the comics before. I think that he also does a really good job of understanding how to represent the Scott side of things. You know, actually, that's interesting. At the X or Marvel, I don't remember which panel, the fan said to, Kieran, or no, he directed the whole panel, he said, so how are you guys feeling about the fact that you guys keep making, you know, the X-Men the bad guys and everything these days? And Kieran jumped in, he's like, no, I'm sorry, the X-Men are the heroes, Scott is right, and this is what I'm writing. Like, and, you know, I believe this, and I, because I had to come up with this justification, you know, for their perspective, and I have to, it has to be something that I can understand and believe in, you know, so I put it together, and I believe it's compelling, and I think it's true. Like, they sell it. They sell you on this perspective, you know. You may not actually believe it, but within the story, you're like, this totally makes, okay, no, it doesn't, it's not really right, but I understand where they're coming from. So, which is quite remarkable.
So that's interesting. So we can go into the AVX, which you haven't been reading the main story, right? You've just been reading kind of...
No, I have not been reading I have not been reading the comic book that is called AVX. I'm reading lots of X-Men related things, and I've been reading. I just started picking up two issues of Consequences.
So Consequences actually would be the interesting thing, because Consequences is more of what I want to talk about. Because we were just talking, you were just bringing up the whole what's Scott Wright. So for people who don't know, Marvel just finished off a 12-issue, twice monthly, so it's been going on for pretty much the entire summer, 6 months, of their big, huge crossover, Avengers vs. X-Men, which is kind of leading into a realignment. The basic story is the Phoenix was coming back to Earth. The X-Men, or at least Scott Summers, looked at it as a sign of the rebirth of the mutant population, which was on the verge of extinction. The Avengers looked at it as more likely the end of all existence. Basically, spoiler, so if you don't want to listen, you might want to stop now or fast forward. The Phoenix goes and takes over five of the X-Men. They bring Utopia to Earth. As everything happens with power, you get corrupted, all hell breaks loose. Someone was right, because in the end, the mutants were reborn, but...
Uh-huh.
Scott is now a branded terrorist. He's in jail. The other people who were kind of leading the movement are in jail or on the run. And the Avengers, at least Captain America towards the end, comes out and says, we haven't been treating mutants right. They've been kind of on the wayside on all this. Everyone's wrong in this. So I guess let's start off.
It's a very Captain America thing to say.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So let's, I guess the question we would have would be, was Scott right?
Whew.
Or who was right?
Well, it was interesting. I mean, it turned both were right, right? It could have gone to hell and everyone could have died. But also it was an opportunity for the rebirth of the mutant species. I mean, in a way, like, Marvel kind of solved the problem perfectly because they were able to show how dangerous the source was, but then also use it as a way to, you know, renew the mutant species. And I think it's interesting because it was pretty much the only solution they could have had that wouldn't have made somebody really angry, which might have, honest to God, been the motivation of doing it that way, you know? But it's the Phoenix, right? So, yes, it's deadly and powerful, but it's also transformative, and they sort of hit on both of those notes. You know, both sides played their role, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because if there hadn't been someone to keep the Phoenix Five in check, they would have gone crazy and destroyed everything. But if they had gone the other approach, then this wouldn't have happened. So everything kind of came the way it was supposed to be. You know what I'm saying? It all sort of solved itself.
Yeah, so it was interesting. So the thing that kind of drives me a little bit crazy on it is a lot of the discussion is Scott was corrupted by the Phoenix. But let's lead what, like, led... That's kind of ignoring what led into the whole thing, is the guy already had his group of people called the Extinction Team. He was doing preemptive strikes before the Phoenix was even kind of on the chessboard. So he was already walking down that path of corruption, at least in kind of my opinion. Now, the interesting is the end is, yeah, they're both right. And I think that the great thing about consequences that's been being played with is Cyclops wanting to be a martyr. And that there was a great, I think it was like issue 2, might have been issue 3, with a discussion between him and Wolverine. And Cyclops is like, the reason you're pissed at me is because you know that a couple years down the road, some kid's going to have a T-shirt that says Cyclops was right, instead of a Che shirt. And to me, that was like...
Instead of a Magneto shirt. Actually,
or Magneto, yeah. Magneto, yeah. But I think he actually said Che in the example.
Really?
I'm pretty sure, I remember, or maybe I'm mixing up stuff, but I'm almost positive he makes it like a Che reference. And to me, like... That was the one thing that bothered me with AVX was I really liked the overall story. Was like it was a big, giant blockbuster. It was tons of fighting, tons of action. It was great. But that interesting discussion wasn't really happening within the story. It all happened at the end or after. So it was probably the only thing that was, to me, missing. But I don't know if you could, like, if the story would have been proved by doing that, it would have seen off with, like, these soliloquies and debates going on and being like, you know, is he right? Is he not right? Blah, 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 blah. Like, it would just seem kind of out of place in the main story. And there was a little bit here and there on the side stuff. But the post that's coming out, I think, is really, really good. Consequences, I think, is really wrapping up the storyline well and taking things in another direction. And it's
and
one
I'm
of those.
I'm sucker for anything that has something called The Last Temptation of Scott Summers. That's like, wow.
Yeah,
that's
and the
nice.
And what's going on? Like, the genius of it is like, you know, if you really think about it, it's like, all right, you can't put this guy up on trial. He lays out. He's like, if you put up on trial, being corrupted by a space entity, you're probably going to get off. So, you know, there's no point in putting him up in trial because he's not going to go to jail. And then if you put him in maximum security, that there's going to be a whole other questions of him being whisked away. So the best thing for them to do is throw him in general population and hope someone kills him.
Yeah, it's pretty messed up.
Yeah, and then the problem goes away. And you really think about it, and you're like, wow, actually, that might be how there is some thought process in this stuff. When you put him to trial, then, you know, he gets his day in court, and he can make statements and get set up. If they put him away, you know, now he disappears, and people start rallying about him. But if you just put him in jail and let nature take its course, and you hope someone shanks him, here goes the problem. Which I thought it was just a very interesting twist to it all, and it's really good. And I'm wondering, because they've got all the promos coming up for Marvel Now, which has started, and you see Cyclops in this red outfit with this weird helmet with an X instead of his normal, like, horizontal I-beam, and, like, when that hits and comes up, like, where is that coming to play? And there was a hint.
Well, that's what they're using to dampen his powers.
Well, no, this is different. So the dampening power is like this big, giant metal helmet with the glasses. If you go back to the Marvel Now promo, which I can email you if you haven't seen it, it's got all the pictures.
I have it right here.
It's all the main players. So there's Hulk, there's Cap, there's Cable, there's Wolverine, and then there's Cyclops in this like red outfit. And he's got a big, giant helmet that kind of looks like something out of Spaceballs, with an X where his normal beam was.
You know what? I'm not seeing that right now. But okay, so what's your take on this?
Well, so, you know, obviously he gets back in the suit at some point. He's in jail now. And Uncanny, the latest issue of Uncanny, hints that there's someone waiting for him to give the go and that he's going to get broken out. If you haven't read, have you read the latest Uncanny yet?
I think, what's the number of it?
It came out this week. Good question.
It came out this week, I have not read it yet. I have not checked it myself yet this week.
So the latest Uncanny has him in jail, I think, or maybe I'm thinking Consequences. Oh, let me look, I have my pile next to me. I could be mixing things up.
I've been trying to do that on the call, on the show recently, is to make sure I have my pile near me so in case I need to reference anything.
Yeah, well, he has, it's interesting in that he's got... Oh, no, it's the Consequences I'm thinking of.
Mm-hmm.
Consequences number 3. He puts down salt or sugar on the floor, and he's communicating with someone.
Mm.
And while I'm thinking about it, let me try to find the promo for you.
I have not read 3 yet, so...
Okay, so there's a cool thing where he's clearly talking to someone, and basically is like, do you want me to break you out? And his response is just like, not yet.
Yeah,
something
that is up.
Yeah, there's clearly something going on, and overall there's the, where the hell this weird outfit is coming into play, and while we chat, I will find the promo for you.
Okay.
So you can check it out. But so overall, like, what do you think of the movement with Marvel Now in general?
Well, so Marvel Now is something that they tried to do with their whole Point One series before, right? Basically, they declare that a certain thing is the moment in where you can just start reading a comic, a new series, even if you've never read it before, and you will understand it and it'll make sense. And it's not a relaunch or anything. It's just a point in the story where you can jump in. And that's what this is also. And I think it's a great idea. I think it's a much better thing to do than to revamp everything and confuse everybody and alienate your fans and lose your beautiful history. You know, but you do need things to be easier for new people. So I think that this is a good solution. The problem is, are they telling anybody who isn't in a comic book store that Marvel now exists? Will anybody know, oh, this is a good moment for me to start picking up these comics? Don't seem to think so, since they're not advertising it anywhere.
Funny you should bring that up. Was were you aware that Joe Quesada was on Jimmy Kimmel Live in a horrible, horrible little skit?
Oh.
To do just
well,
that.
I really hate Jimmy Kimmel. I have no idea why Sarah Silverman is married to him. That's what they should be doing. They should do stuff like that, but they should also be doing web ads. I mean, dear God. If they're, you know, I don't know why they're not putting ads on every blog that any kind of geek culture person is reading. Because, you know, a lot of the geek culture people don't read comics, so this would be a good way to remind them, oh, I could read these comics now. It would be a good jumping off point, blah, blah, blah. I'm not seeing those ads, but it's good if they're making TV appearances. That's a start, I guess, start.
They made a TV appearance. And there was, I mean, if there was 30 seconds to explain what the hell was going on, would have been a shock. Like, it was maybe 5 to 10 seconds of actually saying what Marvel Now is. But it's better than their other TV appearances where they had the hosts talking about DC characters for a majority of time. So they at least moved it in the right direction.
Sad. I it kills me. You know, I have to say, I social faux pas a little bit. I was talking to a woman at Marvel who was really awesome on the Women's Marvel panel, who she deals with their Marvel AR app, and I was basically kvetching about the lack of social media advertising and the lack of any kind of advertising targeting people online, especially women, to like let them know that, hey, you guys watched Avengers and you love Black Widow, you could buy comics about her. Here's where to go to buy it. And, you know, like, all I keep hearing from people is like, yeah, we're a really small company. We don't only have so many people, like, doing stuff and blah, blah. And I'm like, but we do this with political campaigns and we've got, and, like, at nonprofits with, like, no staff and no money. And Marvel is part of Disney. So, you know, I don't know any other industry where the fans are so actively trying to save it. I mean, the music industry could sure use that level of fan activism, but I don't even see it happening. We're trying to help you. You know, but I hear them not listening, and it's just a shame.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it's funny, as a lot of time I hear the, like, oh, we just don't have enough people, and I'm like, you need a person. That's it. One person. I mean, we, you know, a presidential campaign with the internet team, like, last cycle, some of the teams were 5 people. Not even, you know, 3 or 4 people, and they did a hell of a lot and got a hell of a lot of awareness going on. Like, it's not that difficult.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a little, but at least, you know, the you know, person in the video this time wasn't talking about a rival company, so.
So, yeah, I mean, have you seen any other promotion of Marvel Now happening? Because, like, I do think that this is a much better approach than the whole New 52 approach. You know, I really do.
Yeah, I mean, as far as promotion, no, not really. You know, we've got their hashtag. I think the hashtag might have trended like once or twice. But to me, generally, it's been a lot of dropping the ball. So, no, it's definitely not what it should. I mean, the thing you can tell that it's not living up to expectations is Marvel went really far with their Uncanny Avengers promotion. If you did certain things, there was almost like they were giving it to stores for free. And I think in the end, the book did like 300,000, which is, you know, solid number. But Walking Dead 100 did, I think, close to 400,000. So what probably should have been the top book of the year, easy, fell short by a significant number. So something's not quite clicking for them, unfortunately. It's a little frustrating, but, you know, it is what it is, and they're dealing. So, I mean, the interesting will be to see how they're going forward with some of these series. I mean, the one thing that DC seems to be doing smart with their New 52 is if something really is dog shit and is not doing well, they're just cutting their losses, and they're trying new series. And they're on their third wave now, which is... I mean, it's starting to get stretched a little bit as to what they're putting out, but, you know, there's some good stuff that's coming out.
Well, the problem is they're not trying things that are new when they try things that are new. I think Sword of Sorcery sounds like it's something new. They're doing a Sword and Sorcery book with a female lead. Like, that's, I mean, Demon Knights is sort of like that, but you can't tell from the covers. But they, so that's new. So, okay, you're trying something new. You know, and it's by Christy Marks, and she has this huge fan base among women my age, basically, like, who grew up watching Jem. But... other than that, it seems like the new books they're putting out are not anything different from the old books, just different combinations of names and artists from the same exact bag of names and artists that they're drawing from the first place.
Yeah.
It's a different jumble of characters.
I mean, Sword of Sorcery was me is the one that kind of stick out. That's the, okay, this is new. It's not something, I've read the Point Zero book. I read the number one. I kind of shrugged my shoulders and said, it's just clearly not for me.
Yeah, you don't like fantasy anyway, so there was next chance of you having any interest. Which is the point, though. Like, there need to be some books for people who like different stuff.
No, I'm not knocking it. It's just one of those where I can sit there and be like, I can tell some people will probably like this. I'm not one of them, so it is what it is. You know, Phantom Stranger is their attempt to kind of go back to the old school Shadow, really Golden Age characters. And, I mean, as a whole, I'm not the biggest fan of... I think that writing is either really, really well or pretty flat. In this case, I think it's pretty flat. Team 7 is just the normal big guns and action that you would expect. I'm trying to think what else is new. I think the Earth 2 is actually a pretty solid book. World's Finest is a pretty solid book.
Earth 2 is a solid book, but it's not anything different. I mean, it has two female leads, which is awesome. I'm glad they're doing that. But other than that, it's not like it's an experiment in a different kind of comic or anything.
Dial H, I would say, is a little bit different.
Yes, that is different. And it's a different author. It's someone who comes from the sci-fi fantasy world writing. And it's a real smart writer. I wanted to read Dial H for Hero because I loved Kraken. I think China Meville is like a great writer, but it didn't grab me. But it's a good, you know, give someone from a different approach, a stab at a book is a smart thing to do.
But overall, I mean, it's been 13 months. They're already in their 13th issue for a lot of these series, for the Do 52. Like, what's your take? It's been over a year. We haven't had the discussion. You know, what do you think of the new 52?
Nothing that I've read is new or different or radical enough to justify what they did. You know, if they had been able to really diversify the stock of high-quality comics that they were putting out in a way that would attract a new group of readers, to people who weren't paying attention before, you know, then that would be great. But, you know, there's good books in the New 52, don't get me wrong. As everybody's heard a million times, I love Demon Knights. You know, and I thought that Swamp Thing and Animal Man were really strong and really beautiful art. But none of that justified or was different enough to really have justified what they ended up doing. They could have, though. Had they done more innovative things, it could have been justified. But they wasted their opportunity by hiring exactly the same people to do exactly the same thing they were doing before. And what do you think, Brett?
I'm pretty much agree with you. A lot of it's very similar writing. I mean, the one thing it did was put a spotlight back on what DC was doing, so good for them in that. And there's a lot of series that are doing well. Swamp Thing, Animal Man, iVampire is something that they probably wouldn't have done before. All of those seem to be doing really well, but things like Superman, Justice League, none of it's blowing me away. Justice League to me is a Michael Bay movie, so all action, very little character. I mean, even like their big thing of, oh, Superman and Wonder Woman kissed and all that is just like, exactly.
Okay. Stupid. Shallow. There's no interior. Yeah.
No. Well, even on the 13th issue where they kind of address a little bit, it's just like, where is this coming from? I mean, the only thing to me that really stands out, but even then, it shouldn't stand out because they could have done this normal, is Snyder's Batman, I thought, is fantastic.
Yes, that's the other, well, he's a very good writer. I think he's doing some interesting things. When I heard him talk about what he wants to do moving forward on the book on the panel, I was like, oh, I do want to buy that because I do want to read his Joker. That sounds like it's going to be really interesting. But yeah, it clearly didn't, it could have existed beforehand. It would have even made more sense because there being a Batman who's had all of these Robins already and he's only been in action for 5 years, really does not make any sense. So what Snyder's doing would have been even better before they restarted the whole series.
I think someone's comment was like, has Child Protective Services not noticed what the hell's going on with this? Like, this guy's going through Robins, like there's like one a year.
I mean, it's ridiculous. Ridiculous.
I mean, the thing that bothers me with the DC is that if they had taken more of a Marvel approach of, we're going to start at a whole bunch of number ones, it's going to be old continuity, but we're going to update things a little bit, would have been totally fine. I think made a hell of a lot more sense.
Both update it and make them something that you don't need to know the continuity to appreciate.
Yeah.
That's basically it. Like, you're not saying your old continuity doesn't count. You're just saying that this is not, this is fine as a standalone. You know?
Yeah. And see, that's what Marvel's doing with Marvel now is, if you know the continuity, you're probably going to get more out of it, but you do not need to know the continuity to get something out of this. Which is a much smarter approach. And as a whole, I'm not going to see Marvel. I mean, we've had the discussion online through email. Marvel's not necessarily doing anything really crazy yet, but at least it seems like they're going to try some different things. I mean, they've got Captain Marvel, which they're pushing pretty well. As a whole, it looks like Carol Danvers is going to play a pretty big role in whatever comes. This new X-Force team that's four women and Puck is very different. They've hinted that there's going to be two or three more series with female leads.
They're doing a good work on that. And Avengers Assemble with Kelly Sue DeConnick with Spider-Woman on it. That's good. I might have to pick that up.
Yeah, Avengers Assemble right now, like, I'm not jonesing on the series.
Is it started?
Well, yeah, there's Avengers that I don't know if they're rebooting it already, but there was the first arc that is Bendis that, of course, tried to play off the movie but didn't do very well with them dealing with Thanos and overall just not all that great. So you don't need the first, whatever, six or seven issues that are out. Like, it's not that big of a deal. So I don't know if they're rebooting it, or they're just going to keep it going.
It sounds like they're restarting it because, like, now the promos for it are all with, like, Spider-Woman, Cap, you know, and the Hulk and Iron Man. And, you know, Spider-Woman, I don't think she was on it before. I'm a sucker for Spider-Woman and for Kelly Sue DeConnick, so I'm just like, oh, sounds like a plan to me.
Are you reading Captain Marvel?
Yes, I am reading Captain Marvel, but I'm behind.
What do you think of the series right now? I'm actually really interested because I'm kind of torn on it.
I like it. I mean, I think it's good, you know. I think that the art has been interesting, and a couple of the covers I felt like were a little bit wonky, but the interior art has been, you know, really good, and I like the character that she's creating, you know. Like, I buy it. I do buy it. I'm not... And, like, the dynamic that she talks about, like, with, like, you know, the pilot who was, you know, sort of her hero growing up. I mean, I like that. That's compelling. I'm just where she ends up getting sent back in time, so I'm a bit behind. I'm not really – what I've read through has just sort of been the starting point.
Yeah, so I'm interested. When you catch up on that, I'm very fast. I'd be interested to hear what you have to say about the time travel aspect of it. Because that's the point of me where I'm just kind of like, I don't know if I really dig it a whole lot. The art's pretty cool. I mean, the one thing I love is the fact that she's using real history in the book. So the whole thing with the pilots when they're in the first issue is real. If you actually if you go to the back, she talks about it and lists some books where you can learn more, and that there was these women pilots who were really, really good at the beginning of the space program. And they were denied entry because they were female.
Wait, so I read this in the comics, and you were in print, and I did not see that. Did we have different editions?
No.
That would have been on a big thing.
It would have been. It's in the back, so like the letters page, like all the way in the back. There was reference of it. It might have been the second or third issue she brought it up. Maybe it was the second issue, but. Me reading it was about, because I actually looked it up and I was like, holy shit, it's a real thing. I forgot what the program is or what the women were calling themselves, wasn't a real thing. And that there was these women pilots who were really damn good and they just wouldn't let them participate.
Wow. That's really cool. I like that. Anything that sort of brings in historical elements in creative ways is sort of like an alternate history. I think that that's creative. And I will be reading the rest of the comic with that in mind. And I think that's really, really, really cool. Yeah.
Yeah, actually, I'm like doing a quick Google search for it. There's actually an article on Wired that's Right Stuff, Wrong Sex, NASA's Lost Female Astronauts. A whole article about, it looks like, the women who attempt to join the NASA program but were denied. So, I mean, it's great that it's doing it. Like, I really hope the series focuses on that. It really shows how there's all these kick-ass women that people don't know enough about.
Mm.
I think there was, like, me reading those first couple issues, I was just like, holy shit, that's a brilliant idea and a great focus. And, you know, it's got some history. It ties into the real world. It also is really encouraging for people. It got me to go and Google and look this up. And hopefully it gets other people to take notice, too, and maybe inspires one or two people.
Wow. That's cool. I'm a sucker for historical fiction, so.
Yeah, I mean, it was one of those where it caught me, because I was reading it, I was like, oh, that's interesting, and I was like, there's no way that's real, or, like, I've never heard of this, and I've loved NASA and space. You know, at the end, she just mentions a couple things, and I was like, okay. So I forgot what the actual program was called, but it was a real thing, which was really, really kind of cool for her to include that. So I throw her mad props on that, because, one, I mean, she was doing some research, and it was just, I think, something that you don't see too often in comics on many levels.
Yeah, absolutely. It makes a lot of sense with that character, too. That's really cool.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I need to catch up on that, and I definitely think that, you know, knowing that it's gonna be good for the book. But, you know, I don't think anybody's selling it as, like, sort of, feminist historical fiction inspired superhero title, like, that would be a compelling lead line for a lot of people, but I'm not hearing that being spoken, unfortunately. You know what I want to talk about? I want to see, what are you reading and what have you heard about that isn't being put out by the
Marvel
or DC big two publishers? Yeah,
yes.
That people should be checking out right now.
I'm reading a hell of a lot, because those are mostly the review copies I get. To me, the best series that so many people aren't reading is the massive Brian Woods Ecological Disaster series is, to me, hands down, one of the best things on the market. Blows me away every single issue. I mean, this latest issue that came out, which is, I think, issue 5, there was a scene reminiscent of The Abyss out of it that had me, like, digging my toes into the ground. I was so tense reading it.
That book sounds amazing. I just learned about it at Comic-Con, and I'm gonna start picking it up. Do you want to sort of summarize? My friend who told me about it is someone I know through my own activism, and he's like, it's people who do direct action in a comic book that are sort of like being superheroes. I was like, yay.
Yeah, so the story is basically, it's about environmentalist group. The guy that's running it now is a former, like, Blackwater operative who's now in charge of this environmental group. Of course, there are, you know, questions about what they do legally and illegally. It may or may not be wanted, but, like, all hell is broken loose in the world, and there's all these ecological disasters that no one quite knows why. So entire islands have disappeared, the ice is melting, water's risen, like, Hong Kong's flooded, you know, the world is just on a brink at this point, and it's all environmental, and no one really knows why this has occurred. So this boat's going around trying to figure out not just, like, what is going on and survive, but they also have a sister ship that's disappeared. So really the whole story is them trying to find their sister ship while trying to survive in this new world. And then throughout the whole thing, it's kind of leading up and teasing who these people are and what they've been going through. And it's pretty impressive. It was funny. I gave my girlfriend, who's an environmentalist, the first issue, and she read the whole thing, and she got to the end where there's this letter about the main captain, and it's from Homeland Security, and she reads it over, and she's like, the date's wrong on this. And I looked at her, I'm like, well, what are you talking about? And if you go to the top, it was like a Homeland Security header, and it's a 2001 and the date, and I really thought about it. I was like, oh, yeah, Homeland Security didn't exist then. So we pinged Brian Wood on Twitter and was like, hey, we found a mistake, and he's just like, I messed up. But there's like this really, I don't say well researched, but well thought out history involving it all, and environmental groups and activism. And it's just, I mean, Brian Woods, when it comes to political comics, he's one of the best out there of having a message and something to it. And the series is like, it just doesn't let you down. And his Conan, also for Dark Horse, is fantastic.
Yes. Oh, God. Speaking of significant others, it's killing me that my boyfriend only picks up the trade paperbacks because I'm dying to read Brian Wood stuff right now. I know he has one of my very, very favorite Jewish sword and sorcery heroines of days of old in his comic. How can I not love that?
Oh, the,
and I
the
can't read it until it comes out. Yeah. And I can't read it until it comes out in trade paperback. Damn it.
You know, we do get review copies from Dark Horse.
What?
Yes.
I need that.
I'll ping you.
Thanks. Yeah, that book has been consistently great, and I've been consistently behind in it. So
it's been really, really good.
And the art is just whoa, and I always see everybody's art.
Yeah, I mean his too. I mean they're both Dark Horse. They're both top notch series. I talk up a ton. The other one, Revival from Image, which started up. It's only on its fourth issue. You might see it and see, oh crap, another zombie series, but it's more X-Files than zombies. The story is basically all these dead people have risen in this town, so the CDC has kind of have blocked it off, and they're locking it down, and there's a cop trying to keep control in the area, and you don't quite know who's dead and revived and who's not. It's a really, really kind of a cool series. I dig it a lot. Well worth it. And then Point of Impact, which came out this week by Image, is the only thing I can describe it is Law and Order in comic book form. And me being like a big Law and Order fan, it's cool like that.
I totally hate Law and Order, but oh my gosh, I shouldn't say that since I've worked with a ton of the people who write the show, who are amazing. It's just not my genre. But I like the fact that there's a comic that does that because, again, that's something new, and there's people who love that show, and I hope that they, know that this exists, that there's a comic for them out there.
Yeah, I mean, the first issue is, like, woman's dead, the cops are kind of going back and forth, they're great characters, there's some great interactions so far, and the question is, like, okay, why is she dead? So is it maybe the husband did it? Okay, maybe she's having an affair and this guy did it. And, of course, it drops the little bit of hints. And the whole time I'm reading it, I'm hearing the dun, dun, dun in the back of my head as going from scene to scene. And I'm just like, this is Law and Order, the comic book. And it's amazing that no one's really done this yet. And it's being done. It's only one issue, but it's done really, really well. So I can't praise that enough. I'm trying to think what else. I mean, like, I can go through. I mean, Dynamite. I was liking Green Hornet, the new writer. I'm not as quite up on. The Voltron. Like, I was a fan of the cartoon series back in the day. The new series I thought has been really interesting. Dynamite, I think out of everyone, was making hell of announcements at New York Comic Con. They seem to have picked up like all the major writers for new series in 2013. So what they're going to, they not necessarily what's coming out now, but what will be coming out from them is going to be impressive. Like, they've got Remender, Wade, I'm trying to think of this. I mean, we're talking like a dozen different creators are all hopping on board to do series. They're launching a noir line, it seems like.
They're launching
Like a crime noir line of comics.
Oh.
And me being a big fan of that genre, like, that is really, really cool.
Speaking of crime comics, Frank picked up one about the Cleveland Torso Killer that he's really enjoying called Torso.
Torso, Brian Wood.
Oh, so he did that. Oh.
I'm pretty sure.
I will double check on that. Very cool. Yeah, it is the Frank seal of approval.
Yeah, I mean, Brian Wood is actually from, Brian Michael Bendis.
Oh, Bendis. Okay.
Sorry.
Yes, that makes more sense.
Yeah, Bendis is actually from Cleveland. So props from that. Really weird, like we're related in a like similar relations with cousins and stuff like that. Small world.
Yeah, he's been enjoying that one. Well, that's cool. That's good news to get. I really enjoyed. I don't know if you heard about Amy Reeder. Had a Kickstarter funded project on Image. It's messed up that you have to do Kickstarter for an Image comic. But anyway, called Halloween Eve. That has just got lovely art. I think it'd be a fantastic comic. Like, I enjoyed it, but really, when I read this, I was like, this is for girls. And, like, we should make sure that girls read this comic. Like, older girls, you know, I don't know, like, 12, like, maybe tween, you know, tweens. And I think it would be a great comic for them, and the art's lovely.
Speaking of that one.
It sold really well, and they're going to do a new one. They're going to do a new version of it this upcoming year, it looks like. So
A really good one, but speaking of something that's perfect for girls, Action Lab has their Princess List, which has gotten some buzz. Seems to be selling pretty well. It got nominated
what
for Harvey. Princess List. Yeah. So the series is basically, it starts off like the normal fairy tale where the girl gets locked in the dungeon and the dragon's protecting her. Except she kind of one ups it and gets out of the jungle out of the tower and then hops on the dragon, goes to free everyone else. And the thing is, she's African-American on top of it. So it's very empowering for young girls, especially girls who are minorities. It's really, really, I mean, it's a fantastic series. I can't praise it enough.
That's really neat. I'm going to have to check that out.
Yeah, it's one where, like, I would hand it to my daughter in, like, 2 seconds and read it to her. Like, it's fun. It's funny. The art's fantastic. It's like cartoony, but really engaging at the same time. Kind of like Young Justice is on cartoon.
Who's the publisher for it?
Action Lab is the publisher.
Cool. I'll have to check that out.
Really great for kids, especially young girls.
Cool. It's interesting because I've been reading the Adventure Time comics, and they have a new Marceline and the Scream Queens miniseries, and it's definitely not for little kids. I think that they could read it. I just don't think they really enjoy it. You know, it's a little bit meta. I don't know. Maybe I'm not quite good at aging it, but I've really loved those comics. They're picking up them all.
The Bravest Warriors just came out.
I'm sorry?
Like the Bravest Warriors? It's like an Adventure Time spinoff?
I don't know if it's a spinoff. I think it's the same creator. I don't know if it's a spinoff.
Oh, is it this edit? I know nothing about Adventure Time, so I'm
okay in
the dark on that. I had a long conversation with the guys at Boom Edit about it at Baltimore, and they did their best to try to sell me on it.
Oh, my God, it's so good. The show is beautiful. I absolutely cried on a recent episode because it was so touching. One of the best takes on dealing with someone who is like dementia and Alzheimer's I've ever seen in any medium. And it's children's cartoon. I think, you know, so many families have experienced that from a relative. It's quite amazing. But, you know, they've got this beautiful fleshed out universe that all takes place in a post-nuclear apocalypse world. They have wonderful female characters. You know, a male character who is heroic but also cries. Like, what more can you ask for? Hilarious, wonderfully written songs, real characters, good throwaways for the adults to watch, references. They had a whole episode that was a fake film noir starring a Game Boy. Like, one of the characters is a Game Boy machine who's sentient, and he imagines himself in this episode as being a hard-boiled detective. And it's just a wonderful show. Everybody should be watching it and enjoying the comics.
I keep on getting, like, I hear nothing but praise. It's one that I know I should. I just haven't. At this point, I think it's like on issue 9 or something like that. I know I just need to sit down and read through it all and start covering it. The interesting one, I speaking of cartoons that are comics, is I'm fascinated to see what the My Little Pony does for the market. IDW's got a book coming out, My Little Pony, whatever Friendship is, Magic, whatever the series is. If it doesn't do 6 figures in sales, I'll be shocked. I think the first printing was already at like 90,000. from what I saw, like, I think it will go to second, third, fourth printing easy. If the traffic that I got just posting up the preview, or not even a preview, the teaser of their solicitations is any indication, that series is going to be a monster hit. I'll say tens of thousands of people came to the site because of the teaser.
You know what we should do? We should do a quickie blog post after this, just listing all the books we talked about on the show that people might not like know where they are or how to find them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's do that. I'll make that happen. Since we're going to be flooded and, you know, we have plenty of time to work on these things.
Yes.
But yeah, because I want to make sure I check all these things out myself. I don't want to lose track of them.
And
yeah.
Take advantage. We get review copies.
Yes, this is true. You know, the other thing that I picked up that I've been really enjoying, I didn't know it was such a huge phenomenon until I saw they had an event at the New York Public Library, but it's called Sailor Twain by Mark Siegel. It's a graphic novel, Sailor Twain or the Mermaid in the Hudson. Beautiful, haunting sort of charcoal drawings, historical fantasy, really atmospheric. I'm only read maybe the first fourth, maybe not even that of the book, but I think it's a wonderful literary piece of work. Apparently a lot of critics agree, so I guess I'm reading something the critics like for a change. Definitely would think folks should check that out, especially if you're interested in New York. And who isn't? Hello?
Not I.
Well, whatever. Everyone else. Anyway. So especially if you're interested in New York, if you're interested in that in that period in history, or it's the early to basically probably the mid period of steamship travel up and down the Hudson, which has like already become a business, you know. I think what is it starts in like 1887, I think, is the year of the book begins. Really lovely. They have their own website. I think they've got a bit of meta textual stuff going on too, where you can click on different things to get additional images and scenes that aren't even in the book. Website, which is cool.
Absolutely have to check that out. So yeah, I mean, we're coming up at 9 o'clock. I refuse to compete against Walking Dead. So anything else you want to plug or talk about?
No, those are my big ones I wanted to shout out to. Thanks everybody for listening to us. I know we've been gone, but we'll be back again soon.
Yes, we are. Tuesday we've got a special show. It's 9 o'clock. We've got the guys from Home of the Brave that have a great Kickstarter that is about slavery and poverty, and we're going to talk with them, so pay attention to that. We're going to post up about it on the site on that. And, is that it? We're wrapping up?
Yep.
All right. Everyone stay dry on the East Coast, and we'll catch you next week.
Talk to you later. See you soon.
Stay geeky, everyone.